Welcome to the Byline Podcast. My name is Emery, and this is episode 32 with Clay Jacobson from the Idaho Trail Association. Welcome back to the Byline Podcast, and welcome to better backpacking. That's what this podcast is all about. No matter what kind of backpacking you're doing, we can all get better at it, and this is a place where I bring on guests to share knowledge, share experience, in hopes that you can go out there and do better at it. My guest today is Clay Jacobson from the Idaho Trail Association. I originally reached out to Clay to talk about the Idaho Centennial Trail, and it turns out there was a lot more to talk about than just one trail, though we do touch on it briefly. We spend a lot more time talking about the state of trails in general throughout the United States and how they're maintained and what goes into it and the funding behind it and what's happening to trails and how trails are, you know, at risk of disappearing and what you can do to help trails, whether it's volunteering or donating to the right cause. Awesome episode. I learned a ton. The guy is just really passionate about what he does. And he knows a lot about it. So I think if you're curious about how these trails operate and what goes into them, and maybe you're like me and kind of took it for granted for a little while, this episode should really open your eyes. So yeah, before we get into the podcast, a couple admin items. One, I am super stoked to announce that I have a comic book coming out. You can find out more about that at byland.co. It's in one of the tabs. You can sign up to get notifications when things get going. But basically, it's true stories. This is the first issue. I'm having it drawn up right now, but it's true stories of the backcountry to kind of help inspire kids to make good decisions and adventure out and kind of just have fun and kind of tell it in comic book form. And also, if you want to help the podcast, one of the best ways you can do that is by leaving me a iTunes review and a rating. Obviously, honest, that's how I get feedback and that's how I reach more people. So the more reviews, the more good things happen and I get up in the rankings and yada, 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 you know how it goes, however that algorithm is. But it honestly does help me reach more people and get noticed. So if you find this podcast helpful, I would love to know and I would love it if you would share it with other people and leave me a review. Other than that, if you feel like you want to help the podcast even more, I have a couple of shirts that I put together on the website. You can check those out at byland.co. Pick one of those things up. They're drop shipped to you. Super slick and easy and super comfortable to wear. So enough of that. Let's get into the episode with Clay Jacobson. Awesome guy. Here we go. Idaho Trail Association. Let's learn a couple things. Clay, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, man.
Yeah, appreciate it, Emery. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, not a problem. So I found you through when I did the Oregon Desert Trail episode on whatever, you know, goodness happens on that trail. Renee said, I asked Renee, I was like, hey, is there anyone else you should talk to, I should talk to? And she was like, hey, you should talk to this guy, Clay, over at the Idaho Trail Association. He knows about the Idaho Centennial Trail. And so here you are, and I'm super stoked to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be on the podcast.
So do you want to take a second to kind of introduce yourself, what you do, maybe where you're at, and all that kind of good stuff?
Sure. So my name's Clay Jacobson. First and foremost, I'm a thru-hiker.
Nice.
I also work for the Idaho Trails Association as the Trails Program Director. And then through that, I'm involved in nonprofit trail work around the mm-hmm. state of Idaho. And then also work kind of in an unofficial capacity as the Idaho Centennial Trail coordinator, mm-hmm. just kind of freelance as a hiker, helping out other hikers.
So what is Clay? You said you're a thru-hiker to begin with. We kind of chatted about this the other day when we were talking on the phone, and I think you kind of have there's always an interesting story behind how someone got into thru-hiking. So, where did thru-hiking start? And maybe you can back up even more and kind of how long have you been backpacking? How did you get into backpacking? Did you grow up doing it or was it something you did later in life?
Well, my first backpacking trip, was actually the Appalachian Trail. And, you know, I grew up in Idaho. There's obviously a lot of outdoor recreation opportunities. And I did a lot of camping and tooling around in the desert with my truck and stuff when I was growing up in high school. And then I studied, I was an English major in college. And I was kind of like fanatically reading, like Thoreau and Whitman, Emerson, all the like romantic naturalists. And kind of was obsessed with the idea of that connection to the outdoors. And it felt like something that was kind of lacking in my life. And so, like my senior year of college, I ended up deciding that school wasn't the place I needed to be. I needed to be in the outdoors, built like establishing that connection. And so I dropped out of school really with no preparation at all. And up until that point, I'd been actually riding freight trains, catching them out by my house and going from Idaho to Portland to Seattle to Chicago. And I probably rode like 30,000 miles by rail.
Okay.
And so when I had the idea to hike the Appalachian Trail, I figured, well, I've been traveling and living out of a backpack. I think I can do this. And so I showed up with a Mohawk and dressed all in Carhartt. No idea what I was doing. And, you know, learned everything the hard way. So, you know, by the end of the Appalachian Trail, I, you know, met a lot of through hikers. I did a southbound hike. So I left mid-July and finished like December 30th.
Oh, wow.
So by the end of the trail, I'd kind of become a through hiker myself, as you do. Dropped my pack weight down, was really comfortable backpacking. And by the time I reached Springer, I was already thinking about the next trail. So my introduction to backpacking was just kind of diving right in. You know, I was one of those people on the AT that has no clue, but I think that's a, you know, as good a way to learn as any.
Yeah. Is that, you know, I hear it more often, like when people have these ideas of like getting ready for a thru hike. And I think there are people that prepare for a thru hike and there's this training that has to be done. However, after having done one, I kind of think like there's, unless you're doing them all the time, unless you're used to hiking 20 or 30 miles a day for weeks on end, I don't know if there's a whole lot of training you can do. And a lot of people end up doing what you just described, like, hey, I'm just going to do this. And they turn out just fine.
Yeah, I kind of think like no matter how much training you do, like the training and the preparation and the research, that's a large part of the fun, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so if that's your thing, go for it. But on any long distance hike, there's going to be, like, no matter what your approach is, there's just going to be moments where you want to go home.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you do, whatever, that's fine. But in those moments, if you don't go home and you keep going, eventually you reach the end. And so you are a through hiker, you know, it doesn't matter what your style is or how prepared you were in the beginning. By the end, you're kind of transformed into, I think, that thing that all of us as through hikers really kind of aspire to attain is just, you know, being in top form, being physically fit, like totally mentally plugged in and aware, you know.
So I want to go back to when you were in college and you were doing like the English stuff. I had this question for you the other day that I hadn't asked, but, what happened when you were taking those English classes and you were reading and studying these like excellent writers talking about the natural world? What impact did that have on like your viewpoint of the natural world? And like, what did you take away from it? Because you stopped college to go and do this to be like, you know what, I have to be closer. Did their writing kind of impact your decision to do that? And, or what was happening there?
Well, so Thoreau has a line where he went to Harvard to study navigation, right? And so he has a line where he says he would have learned more in one turn down the river than he did in his 2 years of school at Harvard. And like what he meant by that is just like there's nothing more valuable than the direct experience. And so I found myself sitting in class, you know, longing for that experience in the outdoors and that connection to nature, and reading books about it. And, you know, obviously they speak very like spiritually of nature and of the importance of just to the human life of having that connection. And so I felt like I was like, you know, kind of getting it by proxy.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if Thoreau was here, he would tell me to go, like, don't read about the outdoors, go be in the outdoors, you know? And so as school was kind of winding down, I was like, I was in my senior year when I left college the first time. Basically came down to like, my senior seminar was about, you know, how does your English degree, how does what you learned in your pursuit, how is that going to make you a great employee? And I just kind of had the realization is like, I don't really want to be a great employee. I want to experience the outdoors and feel connected to the world. And, you know, that's what I was looking for. And I figured the only way to get that was to go pursue it myself firsthand.
That's interesting, man. You hear a lot of people that enjoy the outdoors talk about these writers, and I haven't personally studied them, especially to the degree that like you probably have and probably still do. And I'm always curious, like it's these guys that like the way I take, and maybe this is wrong of me to say this, but like, I think of these writers that inspire you to like clearly his words inspired you to like, you know, go and do it yourself. Like here's my description of it. Go and do it. And I think that's kind of what I get from these guys. It's like inspiration to go and find your adventure and like use it as an adventure. Don't use their adventure to live. Don't live vicariously through them. Like go and find your own. Is that kind of how you look at it as well?
Yeah, definitely. And like, so, I mean, you have these people that, you know, they're writing like the 1840s, 1850s, 60s, you know, it's a while ago.
Yeah.
But they're writing so passionately about, you know, that same hunger that I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that was also kind of fueled by, you know, just kind of growing up like with kind of a punk rock mentality and kind of anti-authoritarian. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I had an English teacher, one class in particular. It was a summer school class. And so, you know, I'd finished the previous semester, had a couple weeks off, and, you know, took off with some buddies and we're riding trains, and I came back the morning of school, almost didn't make it because, you know, my priorities were all mixed up like that.
Mm-hmm.
But in class, you know, it's one of those inspired English teachers who's also obsessed with the American Renaissance. And he's like, you know, most of you would be better off dropping out of school and hitchhiking around the country, you know, riding a freight train, just having some genuine experience. And he's like, you know, everyone's aspiring to like get the house and the car and the job. He's like, if that's so hard, then why is it then that everyone does that? It's way harder to go outside the normal narrative, you know, find your own place, you know, build your own life. And it was just pretty hilarious because at the end of that class, I walked up and I was like, you know, you're not going to believe this, but I just came here straight from the rail yard. His mind was freaking blown. It was awesome.
That's funny. So you have this like kind of not epiphany, but this motivation to go and find your adventure. You go to the AT, you hike the AT southbound. You start with practically no knowledge of thru hiking, I guess. I'm guessing like you learned the hard way, you said. And that kind of sets you on this trajectory of like multiple hikes. What other hikes have you done?
So after the AT, I did the PCT. Mm-hmm. And when I was doing the AT, like people would find out I was from Idaho. Oh, why didn't you do the PCT? It's like, well, I never heard about it until I was hiking the Appalachian Trail. And I really, really had no clue about the thru hiking world.
Yeah.
So, 2007, I did the AT. 2010, I did the PCT. And there was kind of a transformation in there too. So,
yeah.
On the AT, it was more of like, you know, kind of like a romantic idealist adventure, you mm-hmm. know, hiking from bar to bar and hanging out with all these people. And
mm-hmm.
I was kind of seeking a wilderness experience, and it turned out to be much more of a cultural experience. But also that prepared me to do other hikes like the PCT.
Mm-hmm.
So So after the AT, I fought wildfire for a couple of years, and that also had a transformative effect on me, where, you know, I really learned how to work and to push through discomfort, and, you know, instead of dropping out and doing mm-hmm. something different, I learned kind of the value of persevering and, mm-hmm. you know, putting your head down and powering through. So, you know, I did the AT in like 5.5 months, and then me and a couple buddies from my fire crew, we went and did the PCT in 4.5 months.
Oh, wow.
So we hiked it pretty fast. I think we only took 10 zero days the whole way. But we just approached it with a totally different mindset, you know, of like being strong, efficient hikers. We still had a lot of fun, drank a lot of beers along the way, but we made a kind of an effort to push hard and kind of see what we were capable of. So that kind of took hiking in a new direction for me. In my life, really, but after doing the PCT, I heard about the Idaho Centennial Trail, and you know, I grew up in Idaho and didn't know anything about it, didn't know if it was even a viable hike, and I figured I'd learned so much on my other hikes of, you know, just the logistics of a long-distance hike and how to do the resupplies, how much food do you need for a 5-day stretch, you know, the right gear to be carrying, navigation, all those type of skills that aren't really, there's some leeway on the AT right. or the PCT because there's people that can help you out along the way that are happy to help you out. That's part of the experience. Mm-hmm. There's towns and outfitters along the way. So in 2015, I hiked the Idaho Centennial Trail, and really it was like with the mentality of, I have the skill set to do this hike, even with very little information and, you know, not knowing what's out there, if it's even possible for me to make it to the end. Mm-hmm. But I felt like if anyone can make it, I can make it, you know? And so I actually spent maybe 3 or 4 years kind of casually researching it and looking at it and kind of, you know, in the dreaming state. And, you know, eventually a door opened up in my life and I had the time. And so I decided it was time to go hike, you know?
So how did you approach that hike versus, the other ones in terms of logistics? Did you go alone, and what was the state of the trail when you hiked it?
Well, so when I hiked the AT, I went alone, met some people the first day, and ended up hiking with them all the way to the end. On the PCT, you know, I had such an amazing experience on the AT and had talked up through hiking. You know, just like me, none of my friends knew anything about through hiking because it's just not really a thing out here in Idaho. And so I was able to talk a bunch of buddies to go do the PCT with me. You know, not all of them made it. Some of them did, but I was kind of an ambassador for through hiking just because of my excitement about it, you know? And so on the Idaho Centennial Trail, I actually started with 3 other people, and none of them actually finished the trail, but none of them had any backpacking experience. So, you know, it was an eye opening experience for them.
Yeah.
The Idaho Centennial Trail is a difficult first trail because it doesn't have that support network. Yeah. You know, there is no trail community. People along the trail see you walking with a backpack and they have no clue what you're doing or why you're there.
Yeah.
So I typically like recommend that people, you know, go hike the PCT or something like that, a place where you can learn that skill set with a bit of a buffer.
Yep.
Because the Idaho Centennial Trail is so remote that, you know, if enough things go wrong, you could get into trouble. And there's nobody there to bail you out. And there's nobody watching out for you. You know, there's no Pacific Crest Trail Association or anything like that that's kind of managing and helping hikers. You know, if you on the Idaho Centennial Trail, if there's a fire, you got to figure out where it is, which way it's moving, and what the safest way to get around it is. You know, there's not an organization that's coordinating all that. So it's, you know, it's a wild hike through some really rugged, remote country. It's not a really well-established trail, but it's probably the most intense wilderness experience that you could get, and I would say hiking in the lower 48.
Well, so maybe that's a good segue into here's this incredible trail that's, and how many miles is it? I read somewhere it's like roughly like 900 to 1,000.
Yeah, so if you do a straight through hike through the wilderness areas, just, Nevada to Canada, mm-hmm. it's around 900 to 1,000 miles.
Okay.
Like, so it's so undeveloped that there's no accurate data on it.
Okay.
I tried a GPS track. A lot of people have tried, but every year you run into different things. You got to go around different detours and, mm-hmm. As far as like a dead on, how far is the trail? That's a hard number to pin down.
Yeah.
It's like 900 to 1,000.
Yeah.
But so, when they created the trail,
yeah.
they included some detours around the wilderness areas.
Because
it officially it is open to like motorcycles and dirt bikes or mountain bikes, mm-hmm. whatever. Though I don't know of anyone that's really done it. It'd be pretty difficult due to the trail conditions to mm-hmm. carry a dirt bike.
That kind of brings me to like one of the next topics is you work for the Idaho. So you mentioned you work for Idaho Trail Association. You're kind of like a pseudo, self-appointed, not maybe a self-appointed, but like you coordinate, you're trying to get the Idaho Centennial Trail more established, if you will. Maybe that's a good way of putting it. But there's a,
yeah.
You mentioned the last time we talked about like the state of these trails in the United States. They are taken care of by like nonprofits, and I'm guessing the majority of them. Can you kind of talk about how, like, what the struggle is with a trail that's like so beautiful and so incredible, like the Idaho Centennial Trail, that should probably have a lot of eyes and focus because it is so pretty, but then you have like, but then no one's there to maintain it. So you have to kind of have this. How does that work? How does a trail like the ICT exist amongst all the other trails, and what's happening with the trails around the US, I guess? I know that's a really big question, but I don't even know where to start the question, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as a through hiker, I started on the AT, which is a pretty tough trail, like some difficult hiking, a lot of rocks and roots and things mm-hmm. like that. It's not, a rustic walk, I would say. You see the PCT, in my opinion, got to be one of the most beautifully maintained trails in the mm-hmm. world.
Yeah.
Considering 2,700 miles. And like the through hiking community, I feel like generally doesn't wander too far off of those long distance trails, mm-hmm. But like the condition of the PCT is extremely unique, and there is a hell of a lot of people working, like, through sweat equity, but also fundraising, mm-hmm. putting together the money to keep it in the condition that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of those trails that are held in such high esteem and have so much support, our national trail system is in pretty bad shape. And so as a through hiker hiking the Idaho Centennial Trail, That was kind of like the big takeaway for me, was like, just seeing mile after mile after mile of trails that are like, on the verge of disappearing and never coming back.
Uh-huh.
So I ended up getting involved with the Idaho Trails Association because on my hike, I met the president of the board president of Idaho Trails Association. I just met him on a peak up in North Idaho, like a couple days from the finish. And he had never heard of the Idaho Centennial Trail. And I had never heard of the Idaho Trails Association. So we kind of had a, half hour chat up there on a peak. And when I got back to town, I was doing presentations, talking about the hike, trying to get the word out and just send the message that the trail is doable. Like the resupply system does work. It is hikeable because it kind of had a reputation of being too gnarly to the point where it's not worth it, you know? So working with the Idaho Trails Association, I've had the opportunity to go out not just on the Centennial Trail, but all over the state of Idaho, seeing trail conditions, you know, bringing volunteers, doing trail work, using the crosscut saws to cut logs. And really what we're faced with is an uphill battle to preserve our trail system. So nationally, only 25% of Forest Service trails are maintained to standard. Trails programs are like chronically underfunded, and it's been that way for about 20 years. So Idaho is a little unique in that sense where we have so much public land and some of the backcountry is so remote that a lot of our trails have gone 15, 20 years without getting any maintenance. And so, like a figure I've heard is in the last 20 years, we've lost about 3,000 miles of trails.
Oh man.
And as a Centennial Trail hiker, you know, that's three ICTs.
Yeah.
So just like in the Forest Service, the funding is dried up. There's been like a 40% reduction in non-fire personnel. So that's your rangers, your wilderness rangers, your trail crews. Like the funding has gone down, I think 15, 20% since 2015. And then even this year, so funding's been at about 75 million for the entire country, right? 150,000 miles of trails. It's been at about 75 million for the last like 10 years. The 2018 executive budget proposed by the president suggested an 86% cut to the trails maintenance line item from 77 million, whatever it was at, to 12 million.
Holy smokes.
Right. Now that didn't happen, thankfully, but like a major issue has been with fire. In the last 20 years, there's been a big shift where fire spending has increased exponentially to where, you know, it's like $2 to $5 billion a year going towards fighting wildfire. And all that money has been coming out of the Forest Service budget. So what's been happening is every year the trails budget has been getting poached to fund wildfire costs. So that $75 million for the last like almost 20 years hasn't really been going to trails. It's been trickling in a little bit, but like the reality of on the ground situation is, you know, Forest Service recreation trails managers are working their butts off to just barely preserve, like, you know, stretch their budget as far as they can to try and preserve what's important because they can't possibly maintain what we have.
So they're having to be picky about, guys, we have this many thousands of miles of trail. Which ones are the most important because we can't maintain all of them?
And they have to decide, like, do we fully maintain this trail and get it like perfect and up to spec,
Right.
or do we just go through the dirt bike and chainsaw the logs as fast as we can and, you know, do 200 miles of trails that way instead of 100 miles like fully up to spec, you know? So the ability to keep up with the trail system that we have and the ability to do the quality of work that, you know, the Forest Service has been able to do in the past, like, you know, for 100 years, they've been keeping our trails open. Just in the last couple decades, that has changed dramatically. So, like, for example, I work with this gal. Her name's Pat Hart, and she is a freaking legend here in Idaho. And so she's the trails and rec manager in the Bonners District in North Idaho. And she's been with the Forest Service for 40 years. She was the first woman hired for the Forest Service up there. And so I was on a project with her last year. Her entire appropriated budget, you know, after fire was taken out, was $4,000.
What?
And that's to maintain 400 something miles of trail. which obviously, like, that's enough to pay like one person for a month and a half, 2 months, you know? So I definitely, like, you know, I don't want to knock the Forest Service because they're not in control of their budget.
Right, yeah.
But you have these people like Pat. So she does keep a full trail crew. And the way she does that is through working through organizations. You know, she has like one or two paid people. And to be able to keep them, she has to write grants. And then to fill out the rest of her crew, she's like working with other nonprofits and like bringing in people like at-risk youth from South Central LA. And they spend the summer out there on her trail crew. And so, like, really, it's pretty amazing that she can take that $4,000, which is, you know, so inadequate to do her job. And she's stretching it so far that the unfortunate thing is, like, you have someone that passionate and dedicated to trails, and, you know, they're working their butts off, but still they can only do 25% of the work that needs to be done.
Okay, so one of the questions that I hear this a lot, like, hey, you know, we're having a hard time managing these trails or keeping them maintained. And then you hear staggering numbers like you mentioned about losing trail systems in Idaho, and that's the one state. And then you think about all the other states that have all these trail systems that no longer exist because no one's been able to maintain them. I'm wondering how we got here, though. Like, okay, what happened between the time these trails were established, and why were they established, to what happened to where was the fall apart? Like, was it just a cutback of budget? What started the trails in the first place, and why such a pendulum swing to where now you have someone working with $4,000 trying to stretch that thing as far as she can go? And you have the threat of budget cuts. How did we get here? Have you heard like how that's even
Well,
possible?
in my opinion, there's a lot of factors.
Right.
First and foremost is that like the community around hiking, not just through hiking, but all of hikers, trail users,
Right.
isn't extremely organized, right?
Okay.
If you go hiking, you drive to a trailhead, you go for a hike, you go home. You're not necessarily a part of a club or a political action group or a stewardship group, you know.
Okay.
People just, I think, assume that these trails will always be here, you know. And so because of that lack of organization, you know, obviously you're dealing with limited resources. We got a federal budget, there's a certain finite amount of money. And so groups that are more organized have cornered that money. For example, in Idaho, it's like the motorized trail budget is like $2.2 million on the state level. The non-motorized trails budget is like 120,000.
Wow.
That's because the motorized users are organized. They're able to pull money from the gas tax. And, you know, real like you know nothing against them. They're doing their thing to protect their form of recreation, but nobody's doing that for the hikers. And so that money has been diverted to other things. And then you also have, within the Forest Service, there's always the ebb and, like, you know, back and forth of, is the Forest Service mission to facilitate recreation and promote conservation? You know, sometimes it is. Or is the Forest Service mission to facilitate, you know, timber sales, resource extraction? You know, when, every time the party changes that's in control, the mission changes. So, you know, so some years channeling money towards non-motorized trails to benefit recreation seems like a good thing and has political traction. In the political climate that we're at now, it's pretty dubious. Like, for the people that are passing the budget to put that value, like you see that organization starting to happen, like with the Outdoor Recreation Association and like some of these groups like organizing to try and demonstrate the value of recreation. Because it's hard to put a it's hard to put a figure on what our trails are worth if nobody's done the research, to the people writing the budgets, just like, we have $318 million in deferred maintenance on our trails nationally. It's a big chunk of change. Mm-hmm. And to justify that, you have to really be able to demonstrate the value that trails provide. Because a lot of times the people making those decisions are pretty far removed from the trail system itself, and what the trail experience is.
What's the organizations that are in the fight in trying to like preserve these trails, trying to show value, what is the narrative that they are using to express the value of the trail system?
Well, so recently the major push has been to demonstrate the like economic contribution of outdoor recreation. So you don't pay directly, especially in Idaho, you don't pay to use any trails. It's public lands, you can go hike. Yep. So there's not a direct like revenue source associated with hiking. And so what people are doing now is trying to show like, okay, well, the money that people are spending at REI, the gas that people are using to drive, a couple hours to the trailhead, all these factors are going into the economy and making a contribution, but aren't necessarily getting connected with trail use, right? So that's one important step of just demonstrating, what is the real worth of our trail system? How do you justify spending time and resources and people on maintaining it and keeping it open if it's not clear what the benefits are? So that's one way.
What are those other organizations saying, like the motorists, the motorized folks that are well organized? What agenda are they pushing? Is it similar to, are they doing the same thing, economic benefit?
Yeah. And it's easier for them to show. It's like, hey, we buy dirt bikes.
Yeah.
We buy side-by-side razors. We drive to the trailheads. We have to license our trailers. And that's how they generate that funds, is through programs like that. Trailhead fees, trailer registration, vehicle registration, things like that. Things that are like easy to quantify.
Right.
So they can demonstrate what they're putting in, and they can also, like, as an organized group, they can say, hey, we need to generate money. Like, let's think about a use fee or a gas tax or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And hiking trails, I think, and non-motorized trails, that's something that we're a little ways behind those other groups.
I would imagine that the hunting community probably has an easy way to quantify the economy too, because of that's an easy one. They're buying hunting tags. They're paying for access to places probably. But that one's an easy one. They're very well organized, preserving public lands to retain hunting rights. But as you're like talking, I'm thinking through like, when you said, yeah, you just show up to a trailhead and you just pay. I mean, or you just go. We have a thing in Washington. I don't know if it's in Idaho too, but it's like a Northwest Forest Pass, where as long as you have that on your car, it's like $30 for the year. And I griped and complained about it. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. $30? I gotta pay $30 to go and use a trailhead? That was my initial reaction years ago. And now I'm like, wow, I only have to pay $30 to use these trailheads. I can do anything I want for the most part. I can go hunting, I can go fishing, I can go hiking, backpacking. And this thing's like $30 a year. And to me, I'm like, man, like that doesn't seem like a lot of money for how many thousands of acres you have access to.
Yeah, I agree. And that conversation is kind of just starting in Idaho, or seriously starting. And so in Idaho, the state coordinator for the trails is Idaho State Parks and Rec. And so Idaho Parks and Rec did a summit. 2016, they held three summits across the state to talk to, you know, trail users, partner groups, the public about what possible solutions there are to keep our trails open.
Yeah.
Because basically the situation that we're in is, if things continue the way they are now, then trails are going to keep disappearing.
Yeah.
So, you know, the issue is in Idaho, you know, Idaho is a kind of a unique place, and people have been using the trails for free for the last 100 years, and most of them aren't interested in starting to pay, you know? So some of those things that have worked, like, so you're in Vancouver, Washington has been extremely successful in citizen involvement and keeping the trails open. Sure, you've heard of the Washington Trails Association.
Yep.
So that's the organization that we're modeled off after.
Okay.
One of the founders of the Idaho Trails Association worked for WTA for a number of years, and thought, you know, we need the same thing in Idaho. And so just a side by side, Washington got like 7 million people. The Washington Trails Association is a huge statewide organization. They've been around for 50 years, which is amazing.
Holy smokes, that's crazy.
They've got a budget of like, I think it's like around $6 million from the last annual report, which is great. Like that's a huge contribution in the frame of things. Like when forest districts are getting $4,000, you know, and they have been extremely successful in, you know, coordinating projects. You know, they do 1,000 projects a year or something like that. In Idaho, the ITA, which is the closest thing that we have, we've been around for 8 years. Our budget's about $120,000 this last year. We did like 27 projects, right? However, like, so if you, Idaho has a way smaller population, a way smaller community. And so if citizen efforts are going to be the way to get stewardship done in our national forests, if you just break it up like acres per person, in Washington, each citizen would be responsible for 1.2 acres.
Okay.
In Idaho, each citizen would be responsible for 12 acres.
Ooh.
Right. So the current solution by the Forest Service to, you know, try and address the deferred maintenance and the kind of the crisis that trails funding is at. So they just passed the National Strategy for a Sustainable Trail System. Right. What that basically says is, it, you know, recognizes the contribution of volunteer groups like ITA and WTA, and as well as, like, you know, some of the AmeriCorps groups, you know, Student Conservation Association, Montana Conservation Corps, some of these groups that do a ton of work, right? And so what the Forest Service basically said with the Sustainable Trails strategy is, well, let's double the amount of volunteers that we have. Let's double the amount of miles of trail work they're doing. Let's double the funding for those organizations. But this strategy has no funding attached to it, right? So in Washington, where you have the WTA that's extremely effective, maybe that's not such a bad way to go, right? Like, the WTA is already doing an amazing amount of work, and you've got a kind of infrastructure of mobilizing volunteers and funding projects and all these things. In Idaho, where each citizen is responsible for 12 times as much of the national forest system, it's not going to work. We don't have that infrastructure. There's just not a big enough economy. There's not enough people to maintain. We have 10,000 miles of trails, of just non-motorized trails. You include motorized, and it's something like 22,000 miles of trail. So with this new initiative with the Forest Service, you know, they're scrambling to coordinate this effort. But then, like, we have to scramble as the Idaho Trails Association. Like, we have to double in size, mm-hmm. which we've been growing by 20% per year. You know, there's a lot of interest in preserving our trails. People care a lot about it and are willing to work really hard and, you know, put their money and time into it. But, you know, it's going to be difficult for us to keep up.
Yeah.
If the Forest Service is like, you know, we can't do it. If you guys want your trails to stay open, then you're going to have to figure it out. You know, Washington trails might improve. Idaho's trails are probably going to continue to disappear. So,
dude, okay. When you have hiked literally thousands of miles, you have thousands of miles under your feet through some of the most incredible country. Like, the AT is beautiful. The PCT, beautiful. The Idaho trail system, beautiful. When you think of the amount of miles that have to be, let me rephrase. When you think of how many thousands of miles of trail are in Idaho and what is at risk, when you think of like 1,000 miles dropping off here, 1,000 miles dropping off there, do those numbers mean something different to you than what they would like someone else maybe like that hasn't put thousands of miles of experience under their feet? Like, how do you associate those miles? What happens inside when you're like, man, if 3,000 miles worth of trail goes away tomorrow or in the next 10 years, what is that's going to suck because that means X.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Like, I have a very real understanding of how many miles of trail that is. Definitely. Right. But, and I think the issue is, okay, Idaho, we have 22,000 miles of trail, 10,000 miles of non-motorized trail. Most of those trails are a result of the CCC, you know, the New Deal, mm-hmm. then the huge logging industry, a huge mining industry, mm-hmm. and then also the lookouts and the fire industry, or the fire wing of the Forest Service, which Idaho has hundreds of lookouts. Most of them are empty now. Mm-hmm. Like, people aren't really mining, and there's still some huge mines in Idaho, definitely, but not to the extent where people were mining every nook and cranny of the state,
right.
You know? And so they're like, you know, maybe 10,000 miles of non-motorized trails is too much. Like, there's places that, you know, you could control impacts and, you know, facilitate a good recreation experience by reducing the number of miles.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue is what's happening right now is the number of miles is being reduced in an unmanageable way. It's just happening as a consequence of no funding.
Right. It's not intentional.
So it's not really, it's not really a decision-making process involved in yeah. what's best for our trail system. It's just happening uncontrollably.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. That's like the biggest, as far as the number of miles that are disappearing, not necessarily always a bad thing to lose
sure.
miles
okay.
of trail, but it should be done in a way that's like, putting a value on trail sustainability. And, you know, another thing about Idaho trails is most of them were initially made as working trails. You know, mm-hmm. You want to get up to the top of the ridge and log white pine as fast as you can, so the trail goes straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that leads, like, that means lots of erosion. It's just not sustainable.
Right.
Trails that are built today are built with, you know, recreation experience, like, how enjoyable is it to hike?
Mm-hmm.
Does it showcase the area that you're in? Is it a sustainable grade? Does it have sufficient drainage? Like, all these factors that, you know, like, Chinese miners weren't thinking about when they made the trails.
Yeah.
So the number of trails can be reduced. Unsustainable trails that, like, are very expensive to maintain because they wash out every year,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, maybe it's not a bad to, like, you know, naturalize some of those areas, but should be done like deliberately, I think.
Yeah. Well, so, okay. So, we're going to time this episode for National Trails Day. I want to learn a little bit about that. Is that something that, I guess, what do we do from here? Like, what do you, like, someone listening that's like, whoa, this is, I didn't know about this. Like, maybe I should start looking into helping my local trail system or something. Like, what do people do, and how does National Trails Day fit into that picture? Or, like, I guess, what happens now? Like, what do we do? Or what can we do?
So National Trails Day is, you know, kind of a nationwide effort to get people invested in public lands, get people, you know, aware of some of the issues our trails are facing, and get them involved in helping to maintain trails. And, you know, it's a lot of different organizations are involved and do all kinds of different trail events all over the country. So no matter where you are or where you like to hike, if you have any interest in going out there and giving back to your trail system, there's definitely some kind of organization that's, you know, willing to swoop you up and put you to work. And so, like for us, you know, working with volunteers, and even as myself, as a thru hiker and a trail user, and then I've been with the Idaho Trails Association the last 3 years, and, you know, there's a difference in, you know, ripping 20-mile days on trails and then hiking a trail that you yourself have worked on. You know, like, yeah. I dug out this water bar.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a level of personal investment. Mm-hmm. I think it deepens your appreciation of, mm-hmm. of what we have, like the ability, you know, our unique resources in this country, our trail systems, our national forests, all these things. It's like you it's hard to value a mile of trail until you've, you know, had to brush out 300 mm-hmm. yards of overgrown trail, you know.
Yeah.
It really puts it in perspective. And so I think it's, you know, volunteering is a great experience. Like the outcome is great, keeping our trails maintained, maintaining mm-hmm. our access to public lands. But probably, like, it's kind of like through hiking, there's unanticipated benefits.
Yeah.
Like personal benefits. So just that deeper investment. I mean, for me, it was kind of a life changing experience. All these things I've learned about trails, I didn't learn on the AT mm-hmm. or the PCP. I learned after hiking the Idaho Centennial Trail and thinking, you know, like, wow, somebody has to do something about these trail conditions. This is insane. Mm-hmm. And like, it was just taking that step has led me down this path where, you know, now I'm in a position where I get to spend my summers out in the, you know, out on the trails, either doing trail work or doing backpacking trips, like stewardship work type mm-hmm. of stuff, working with all kinds of people from the community, all kinds of, you know, amazing organizations that are dedicated, invested groups, everyone's just trying to support our public lands. And so I think that's a great place to end up as a thru hiker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people like trying to balance, like, how do you switch gears in life from going to work to going to thru hiking? And it's like,
yeah,
if you hike too many trails, you get dangerously close to just, you know, full submersion and never coming back.
I bet. Huh. Man, I'm gonna be honest. You kind of blew my mind with a lot of stuff that you've talked about today. It's like it resonates with me because, and I can only imagine from your perspective, like, cool, you've hiked all these trails, and then now you probably look back on those trails you've hiked, and you're like a trail like the PCT, and you probably go, holy smokes, that trail. I don't know if it does or not, but it could mean a lot more to you. Or maybe it means a lot more to other people once they see how much effort is put into that kind of a trail. And I think back to the trail conditions on some of the sections, and I'm like, you know, those were very small moments in time where you're like, man, the trail could be fixed here. And it's like cherry picking. It's like that trail is incredible. It's incredibly maintained. It's the system on it is amazing. And if every trail was like that around the U.S., people would be backpacking and hiking all day long. I mean, but that's not the case. And so we're trying to catch up to making hiking as enjoyable for people as possible, so they can continue going out there and saving these lands. And man, what an interesting concept, man.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I know for a fact there's some kid on the AT right now having a great time and doesn't care at all about who did the work to maintain the trail and why the trails are in the shape they are.
Yep.
I know that because that was me when I was hiking the AT,
yeah.
You know, that's fine. Like, take that journey.
Mm-hmm.
And if you continue through hiking and you're getting more and more out of trails, like, I think this is a developing movement in the through hiking community, is a personal sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a through hiker, we know the value of our trail system because it has given us so much, you know.
Yeah.
It's a big part of our life experience. It's hard to put a dollar figure on it because it's, you know, such a big part of who we are.
Yeah. Huh.
But, it's okay to not be aware of federal budgets and how the Forest Service funds trail work and, you know, all this stuff. Not everybody needs to know that.
Yeah.
All you need to know is, if you want to help, there's tons of groups out there organizing projects, doing a lot of work. Like the Idaho Trails Association, kind of what our format is we're interested in preserving our trails, keeping access to some of these places that we have in Idaho that are unique, special places.
Mm-hmm.
Two is preserving a backcountry heritage, right? So if you do a week-long project with us, we're packing in with the mules, we're setting up a big wall tent, we got a backcountry cook doing, you know, Dutch oven cooking, and, you know, we're using crosscut saws. That's all we use. We don't use chainsaws at all. It's all hand tools. We do everything the old school way. And part of the reason for that is to just keep that legacy alive. You know, that's the way it's been done in the backcountry for 100 years. What's going on now is, you know, just minimizing the impacts that, you know, trails can do by cutting funding, reducing resources. You know, just the ranger districts don't have the trail crews.
Yeah.
They don't have the horse packers. They don't have the crosscut saws. So what we try and offer to our volunteers is, you know, it's just an eye-opening experience to see what it takes to spend a week out there cutting trees and clearing brush and digging water bars.
Mm-hmm.
But we try and make it as enjoyable as we can by, you know, usually we pack in beer and wine, and we try and have great food, and it's an amazing experience, all around it.
Dude, I ran into a couple trail crews along the PCT, and man, I was like, these guys were just working hard, you know, and they backpacked in a long ways and to get to this one section that they're working on. And they were like smiling the entire time. Like it was you could tell they were working really hard, but like there was something that they were getting from that I was like, holy smokes. And I remember like our group was always made sure to be like, dude, thank you so much. Like, thanks for the hard work on this thing, because here's these like, and some of them were really, really young people, man. Like, that it was just out there doing it. And you're like, wow, you're in the middle of nowhere, really, really putting out an effort. No one's looking at you. No one's, the only things you're getting is internally and from hikers passing you by, but you just made this section of trail passable for pack animals or passable for this person or that person. And who knows, it just, the long-term impact of that trail. But you could tell, man, they were smiling the entire time and they were working hard, but you could tell they were getting something from it that piqued my interest for sure. Like, interesting. Yeah. Super cool, man.
Well, like, so I take out groups of 10 to 12 volunteers at a time for a week for most of the summer. I've never taken a group out that had a bad time.
Yeah.
Right. And like, kind of the amazing thing about trail work is it is hard work. But there's such an immediate reward
because,
you know, you set up camp, maybe the first down tree is 30 feet down the trail, and you start with that one. and you work all day, you know, just fighting your way through all these issues, turn around and hike the trail back, and you see the immediate change,
cool.
the immediate improvement.
Yeah. Right?
And so you do that for a week, and it's like, okay, yeah, you worked hard, but you were working with cool people from mm-hmm. all different walks of life, and then you could just see for yourself the impact that you had, which not everything has that kind of opportunity, you know?
Yeah. Dude, that is...
just something to be said, like working hard, something really basic, but necessary.
Yeah, man, for sure. Well, man, Clay, dude, thank you so much for coming on and sharing about that stuff. What is the best way for someone to get a hold of, depending on their area, like people are listening all around the country probably. So like, what's the best way to find out? Should they just do like a Google search, or what, how do they get involved? What's the easiest way?
Well, for if you want to get involved in the Idaho Trails Association project, idahotrailsassociation.org.
Okay.
I believe recreation.gov has a lot of volunteer opportunities just for volunteering for the Forest Service.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the correct address. It could be something else, but
I can look it up.
Yeah, just Google it. Look up. You know, trail work volunteer opportunities, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you go to trail days, or you go to PCT days, or mm-hmm. you go to any of these events, look for the volunteer groups. They're going to be there.
Yeah. Okay, man. Cool, dude. Thanks again, man. I'm really glad we did this episode, because it's something that I've been curious about. And my original intent was to talk about, you know, I was interested. I was like, hey, let's talk about the Idaho Trail Association. But then to be able to dive into the current state of the trails, and that all wraps into one big thing that probably has a lot more content than what we could probably cover in an hour. But I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me and kind of just shoot me straight on what the current state of things is, and what people need to focus on and take awareness of.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, the takeaway is just, you know, we're citizens of the U.S. These are our public lands. They're our trails.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way things are right now is the trails need our help. And there's plenty of ways to get involved. There's plenty of ways to, you know, help ensure that our trails stick around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important as hikers and trail users that, you know, we fight for that.
Yeah. Well, dude, thanks again. I will include links to, I'll try and find some other websites. If you think of any, send them my way, and I'll include them in the show notes. And then we'll get this published, like a week before the National Trails Day. So hopefully it'll be well timed, and people can look up at least National Trails Day, see what's going on in their area. And if they can find some time to spend some time on a trail, that'd be awesome. That'd be a win.
Yeah. You know what I just thought of when you're asking how they can find a group? Go to if you're looking for a group to volunteer with, go to your local outfitter or REI or someplace like that.
Yeah.
Look for the bulletin board, because there'll be posters and flyers and opportunities. And no matter where you're at, there's definitely opportunities to do trail work.
That's a really good idea. So probably, yeah, local outfitters, REIs, any outdoor stores, probably going to have someone, some representative, or someone in the store that knows someone that's representative of a thing. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate the time. Maybe we'll have to get you back on again if something comes up, or if anything happens in the world of trails. Otherwise, dude, thanks a lot for the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. And I feel like we didn't even really talk about the Idaho Centennial Trail. So.
I know, dude. We'll have to do an entire episode on the Idaho Centennial Trail, because I'm sure there's probably a lot to talk about there based on, you know, it sounds like it's not the easiest one. You have to be self-sufficient. I looked up pictures of it.
As a thru hiker, you'll appreciate this. So you go through Stanley, Idaho,
okay.
little town, You don't go through another town for 400 miles.
Oh my gosh.
300 miles of that is wilderness, which is one road, one dirt road that goes in between them. It's like the boundary. But so you got to get your food flown in to these backcountry ranches that are like grandfathered in.
Oh my gosh.
Like they do some of those backcountry ranches on the CDT and stuff, yeah, like that. But
how cool is that? Like
the Frank Church Wilderness alone is bigger than Connecticut. It's like 2.2 million acres.
Dude, that sounds incredible though. I mean, it's also terrifying as well. Like 400 miles without a town. Okay. Like that's a stretch, you know, but at the same time, I mean, and I get that's why you say, hey, this is not a trail for someone that's like just learning a thru hike. Because you got the reps in on previous trails. So you're probably going into it.
You're not going to see Cheryl Strayed out there.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's the thing is that like, man, you really have to have your stuff together. You have to have some wilderness skills because 400 miles between towns is intimidating, but it's also at the same time, it's probably incredible as well. Like to spend 400 miles without seeing a town is probably something really special.
Definitely. And really there's, you know, nowhere else to go do that in lower 48, at least.
Go Idaho, man. I always think of Idaho as like this little hidden gem.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Right on, man. Well, thanks a lot. Yeah, if maybe we'll have to have you back on to talk about the Idaho Centennial Trail specifically. So we'll have to coordinate that.
All right.
All right, man.
Well, I did your podcast. Now you got to come do a trail project.
Heck yeah, dude. I want to start doing that stuff. So yeah, let me know what we can do. And yeah, I'm more than happy. I want to start doing that kind of thing. So hit me up.
Cool.
Cool, man. Thanks a lot.
Yep, no problem.
That is it for episode 32 with Clay Jacobson of the Idaho Trail Association. Thank you so much for joining me. If you heard anything in this podcast that made you go, huh, yeah, maybe I should do something about that, make sure you check out, you know, guys like him and reach out wherever state you are. I'm sure there's a trail organization, so make sure you do that. Make sure these trails stay open and do what you can to help out these organizations because they are doing a good thing. And we want to have trails around for a long, long time. So if you're headed out this week or weekend, whenever you get this podcast, be safe. Come back next time for the Byline Podcast, and we will see you then. See ya.